now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to The Game, Qatar 2022. Today we'll look back on England's exit from the World Cup at the hands of France and ask what needs to happen next when it comes to the head coach position. Will Gareth Southgate stay on or will he go? We'll also look ahead to the two semi-finals coming in midweek as Morocco take on France and Croatia face Argentina. All of the subplots within will be discussed and much more on The Game. Hello again and welcome to The Game, World Cup 2022. Of course, things are different now. England are out of the tournament. I am no longer in Qatar. I didn't fly back with the team to Birmingham, but if I was on that plane, well, there would have been strong words exchanged. Let's say that. I'm alongside Gregor Robertson, Molly Hudson and James Restall to, in the clear light of day, now that things have settled, take a look on England's World Cup campaign as a whole and also look ahead to the World Cup semi-finals, which of course will not include the Three Lions. We'll also talk about Gareth Southgate's future in the job. And this is where we start. The dust has settled. How do we now view that game against France? Are all of the things that are being said true or false? I mean, there are people that are talking about Gareth Southgate's approach. They're talking about his use of substitutes. You know, hindsight is a wonderful thing. And that's why I made all of my comments about how England should play before the game. So I'm not going to go over them again. I'm going to leave it up to you guys. England's performance against France, are we still feeling how we felt straight after the game, that they played well and on another day they could have easily won that match? James Restall.
I wouldn't say easily, but weirdly, I felt after the final whistle, I felt a sense of strange contentment that I've never had after watching England. I thought,
Followed by John Cena. This is a moment which has to be breaking news on the podcast.
I was the other day as well. I was
what
like,
the hell? What is going on?
Who's your most famous follower?
Well,
genuinely, because I'll shock you with mine.
Go ahead,
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, she's been following me on Twitter since 2013, which I can only imagine was for the brilliant Late in Orient content she'd have been getting at that time.
This is taking a strange turn, this podcast, already.
Yes. Keep this in, John. It's great stuff.
No, we will. Oh, sorry, this is meant for the podcast. No, this is, listen, if a famous person ever follows you during the podcast, please do make us aware. It will lead to no end of hilarity, okay? That's all I'm going to say. John Cena, Carly Rae Jepsen. Yeah, Molly Hudson, you're going to say a really famous footballer. Gregor, it's probably me, right?
Absolutely, it's you, yeah.
Back to England, James. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, it's fine. No, I felt weirdly content. And the reason being, I thought, I've just watched England go toe-to-toe with one of the best teams in the world in a really entertaining match. And it's been a completely 50-50 game. I think England have had some great chances. I think were it not for a penalty kick, there'd be extra time. And who knows what would have happened then. And I thought a lot of people, I think, have been saying this is kind of par what England have done. But I think actually it's not for me. I think they've shown they can be aggressive. They've shown they can entertain. I always say going into a World Cup, and this is probably, again, an unpopular view, I don't really care if England win it. I'm not invested in it to see if England will win the tournament. What I'm invested in is seeing if England will play entertaining, good football and will get far enough into the tournament to make a good account of themselves. I was reminiscing today with somebody about the 2006 World Cup in Germany and how England kind of, I wouldn't say stank out the group stages, but played pretty poorly in the group stages, got to a last 16 match, which was very stodgy as well, and then saved their best football for a game against Portugal, which they ultimately lost. And there was a real sense of kind of, it didn't feel satisfying at all. For me, this feels like a satisfying tournament for England. And I think there's more progress has happened on the pitch. Yeah, I think there's no shame in going out at this stage. And I don't think that's a defeatist point of view. I've heard people write, and I've seen people write today that, you know, no, England should be winning tournaments. I don't think so. As long as we're entertained and as long as there's clear progress, and, you know, progress isn't just how far you get in a tournament. It's about the style of football as well. I think the future's bright.
I think I can see a bead of sweat rolling down Hugh's forehead there. I mean, I think that probably is the polar opposite view to Hugh Wizencroft. shall I let you come in there, Hugh?
Well, listen, I know I agree with James. It isn't all about winning the tournament. Not always. I mean, you do have to play to a certain level to be able to win the tournament. The thing is, I think England have reached the level where they are good enough to win this tournament. Certainly, on the evidence of what happened in Qatar, they were amongst the teams that were good enough to win the competition. My only feeling is that they saw it too holistically. They saw it as an opportunity to show the world that they could go toe-to-toe with the best sides. They saw it as an opportunity to lay down a marker that an attacking, aggressive 4-3-3 is the way how England want to play in the future. And my point is, in terms of this single match, you didn't have to do that. The focus should have been on just winning it. It was so important. I think they kind of lost that. So they did show us all of those things. They showed us that in 2 years' time or a year and a half in Germany, an attacking front foot 4-3-3 will probably be conducive to us probably winning that. In 4 years' time, certainly, given the players that we have, this will be a team that an aggressive front foot 4-3-3 will suit, and we will play great football. But I think we were guilty with running away with ourselves slightly and not looking at this as a single match. Three at the back, five at the back, whatever you want to call it, has served England incredibly well in tournament football. And the games have not been entertaining. And we haven't played anyone off the park, but we have gone through. And I just don't think that was the emphasis in this game. I actually think we got carried away with it. Like I didn't know why. And that's why I said, I'm going to say this before the game, because I think before the game, before I knew whether Southgate was going to change or not, I truly believed and still believe that a more stodgy 1-0 Harry Maguire header, Harry Kane penalty, you know, that was our better way of going through. I think we are evolving. We're on a journey. We will be that team very, very soon. I truly believe that.
Hugh,
we're just not
Harry
that team yet.
Harry Maguire hits a post with a header from a set piece and Harry Kane misses a penalty.
We needed to score three times. See, that's what I think is the issue, because the way that we played, we needed to score three times to win the match. Played the more boring way, we needed to score once to win the match.
I think England actually were playing a boring version of 4-3-3 in what they did, because out of possession in particular, Kyle Walker was a right centre back. He wasn't bombing on. He wasn't creating an overload on the right hand side. And I think England were worse in an attacking sense for that. And obviously that was the threat of Mbappe had to be negated. They allowed Griezmann to get into lots of spaces on England's left side in the first 20 minutes, and that hurt them, and that's what led to the goal. But then they fixed that, and Bellingham was very alert to that in the second half and shut down that threat. I think it's a good team creating two good chances and scoring two good goals. I don't think England's approach necessarily is what led to them conceding those two goals. I think it's they were playing a world-class team that can create world-class chances. And England certainly had the chances to score three, possibly four goals in that game. They came up against a goalkeeper who had a great night, and they came up again, and they had, you know, the rubber of the green went against them in missing a penalty and a header shaving the post.
I think my probably main takeaway, having gone through this with the Lionesses in the summer, was like how difficult it actually is to win a major tournament. And I think I tweeted it after the game, like you need so many margins to go in your favour. And whether that's the opponents, like you think about how we've talked about England and how well they've played in this tournament and how positive they were. And all of those things that maybe we haven't said about England in the past, you know, we've talked about, you know, being a bit more defensive or whatever. It wasn't like that. But we've gone out of the quarterfinal stage. We've done worse. But it feels like we've done better, even though we haven't done worse. And I think that's kind of a reflection of, you know, who you get in these games. I think we were all saying it, and my kind of friend group was like, right, whoever wins this game is probably going to win the tournament. And I know you might disagree with that, but it just felt like we, England, got unlucky with playing France, which then feels like we went out of the quarterfinal stage, which is a step backwards, but it shouldn't feel like that because actually there were a lot of steps forward. It was just almost the luck of the draw or the luck of the kind of route, I think. I think for me, I was happy that we didn't play that negatively kind of 3-5 at the back, whatever you want to call it, because I think it's a reflection of how far England have come under Gareth that they don't need to play like that. They have the players and the belief now to actually think that they can go toe-to-toe with France. And I don't think the fact that we lost that game should mean that we think the only way to play those games is to be defensive, because I don't think that's the case. Like, it came down to such small margins that on another day you'd have played that game maybe with a different referee and you might have won it. So I don't think the fact that we lost is necessarily a reflection that we should go back to being negative, because there's enough talk about Gareth Southgate right now and his future. Imagine if we'd played three at the back in that game and still lost. Like,
he said, it's funny you say that, because he said that. I remember him saying that after the last 16 game in the Euros against Germany, where they won 2-0, playing the three at the back. And he said something along the lines of, if I'd lost that game, I'd have been crucified for setting up that way, when they'd played a kind of progressive 4-3-3 in the group stage and then went for a then went to a kind of more pragmatic system to basically stop the threat of Germany's wingbacks, which was they'd caused a lot of damage in the group stages, and they completely eradicated them from the game. They were Goossens, who'd been amazing, had a terrible game, and I think that's the thing. It's like I can see genuine progress from even what 18 months ago, and I know we'll come on to Southgate, but this is why I would back him in 18 months' time to take the team further again.
I think if they'd have played against Germany and not done that and played a back four, they probably would have got destroyed. But they didn't against France, even though they played with the back four and were more adventurous. And I think that is a kind of sign of the progress, even though, as we're all sat here thinking, it's a bit weird to be so negative when we've lost a game and we've lost a quarterfinal and we're out of the tournament so early. There's so much more to come and there's so much more potential in that group. But I think there is still, like, I always think, especially with a club manager, you can kind of see a trajectory of when the manager comes in and then you see the steady improvement and then you see that kind of plateau and you're like, right, what do we do now? I think England is still on that upward trajectory. I don't think they've reached that plateau yet, even though if you look at the results in the tournament, it's technically gone down.
I my only regret is that I wish we'd had this 2022 team in 2018. And it's what you were saying about the luck of the draw, Molly, because if this team had had that run, I think they might have, well, I think they'd have got to the World Cup final and they'd have given France a game in the final. And I think whereas this team now has basically, it felt like watching the World Cup final, and that sounds ridiculous, but the quality of the match and the way that it was decided by such fine margins felt like you were watching two really high class teams. And feels weird that the World Cup's continuing, because I feel like I've just watched the final that England have narrowly lost.
I think a lot of us felt it was going to be like that. Going into this game, it almost felt like whoever wins this match will have the best chance of winning the World Cup, with Brazil going out, with the way that Argentina have been playing, with, I guess, Croatia's lack of a full 11, the huge underdogs, Morocco. I mean, it really felt like it was a better opportunity. I felt it was a better opportunity than 2018, because of how good this squad is compared to 2018. Had we got past France, you almost feel like, and again, it's just English arrogance, by the way, so apologies to all of our non-English listeners, but you almost feel like England could have won it and football could have been coming home. So I think that was part of the real disappointment. I still feel, because I do think, you know, all the things that we've been speaking about, they are to do with the wider vision of England. And there was not enough thought of bringing it back to the 90 minutes. And a lot of the decisions at this tournament make me think that Gareth Southgate knew he was leaving, or knows he's leaving. I know he said he's got to think about it and he's going to take time and whatnot, but he has changed as much as the team has changed. Playing that 4-3-3 to begin with was a change. You know, he didn't have a settled formation because England had come into the tournament without a win in six games. So it was really up to him, you know, to roll the dice on the formation that he thought was best to get England results. But he went with a front foot attacking side. We all loved it because the fans have been calling out for it for so, so long. He even, as misguided as it was, changed his approach to his substitutions. You know, he brought all of the names off the bench. He brought in the squad, the likes of James Maddison, who all the fans were calling out for. You know, he did seem to change. And the approach in this game made me think he's leaving. Because in my heart of hearts, I still think he's the waistcoat. And I still think he would have preferred to play the more negative style. But he just kind of knew, well, if I go out, there's a chance of me going out either way. We might as well play on the front foot. And I can't really be criticized for it because every journalist in the country has been calling out for me to be on the front foot, and so has every fan. So, look, England could have easily won the match playing both ways. This is not, again, I'm not going back to the major criticism I had when I was feeling the pain straight after the game. I just think it was a great message that Southgate sent about the future of English football and who we want to be and what we want our identity to be. But it was, if he really wanted to just focus on the 90 minutes against France, maybe it would have been slightly different. And I take everything you've said on board, James and Molly, to be honest, because you're both right. Maybe someone out there thinks I'm right too. Gregor?
I kind of agreed with you up to that last sentence where, come on, he's put out the team he thought was going to win the game. He's not thinking about sending messages about the future. He put out the team he thought was best equipped to win this game. And we can debate whether he was right or wrong about that until the cows come home. The thing about the bigger picture with England is something I've kind of thought about a bit more in the last 24 hours. And it's true, it's kind of, you know, there was a countdown clock to Qatar in St James's Park that's now run out. All the stuff that's been going on over the last decade plus has had a profound effect. And Southgate's been at the very heart of that. The only kind of, you know, we spoke about whether we're going to come on to talk about Southgate, I'm sure, but the only thing that has in any way come close to persuading me that England will be best placed with someone else in charge is when you look at actually what Serena Wiegmann did with the Lionesses, someone who'd been there and done it before, or with the impact of someone like the Morocco manager, Walid Regragui. You know, someone who comes in and their impact is like, it's all about winning. And that comes back to the thing that James was talking about. Like, what do you want? What do you really want from England? Do you want to be entertained? Do you want to feel a real affinity with the team? Or do you want to go win the bloody World Cup? So like, that's the only thing. I don't know who that person is. Like who's this mystery person who's going to come in and be a winner, who's been there and done it before, willing to manage England. And actually the public is willing to have them because they won't be English.
There's not so, many like,
exactly. So, That's the only way. Yeah, you're right, Molly. Serena could be the one. But that's the only way you could persuade me that there's someone better out there than Southgate.
And actually, if you went down that route, people were saying go and get Roberto Mancini. Italy didn't even qualify for the World Cup. Exactly. So I do think so.
Exactly.
There's no exact science to this, and I looked at the list of names that we published this morning on potential contenders, and I think there's flaws with all of them, and none of them are perfect. And the thing that I think would be the biggest thing that would be lost by Southgate walking away, and it would be Southgate walking away. It's all on him. The FA want to keep him. There's no shortlist. They haven't in Matt Lawton's stories today. There's no shortlist that's been drawn up. It's all on Southgate. And the biggest thing that would be lost if he walks away is the fact that he has made English Premier League players want to come and play for England. How many times over the years did you hear about the cliques, about the players not wanting to turn up? There's an excellent bit in Paul Hayward's book. Paul Hayward's just written a brilliant book, the biography of the England team over the last 150 years. And there's an interview with Southgate towards the end. And Southgate actually mentions that when he picked his first squad in 2016, I think there were three dropouts due to injuries or whatever. And he tried to call up three players and three players refused to be called up to the England squad because there was just such a feeling of negativity following Iceland and all the years before that. And they didn't want to be part of it. And he's made people want to be part of this group. And he's created this incredible aura around the team. And actually, Yes, we want them to win World Cups. Yes, we want them to be more successful than they are, or certain people do. I actually think that you wouldn't guarantee the level of performance that this group are currently reaching if you got somebody who couldn't create this same aura around the group. So that for me is a kind of more important reason for why he's got to stay, and actually why of the list of candidates there, I wouldn't be totally against Steve Holland staying and taking it, because at least he knows how to create this environment. He's been a central cog in the Southgate project. So I genuinely, I mean, we'll talk about this. I think what's the reader poll in the Times says 69% of our readers want Southgate to stay. I'm firmly in the 69%.
Yes, James, you're absolutely right. Over 20,000 pollsters, if you like, voters on the poll online. 69% of them want Gareth Southgate to stay. I am also alongside you in that camp. I think he is the right manager for England. The list that you mentioned published on the Times app in terms of potential contenders should Gareth Southgate choose to leave. You mentioned Steve Holland. Steven Gerrard was on that list. Graham Potter, Eddie Howe, non-English, Brendan Rodgers, Thomas Tuchel, and Mauricio Pochettino. And there'd be question marks over a lot of those names should any of them be linked with the England job, to be honest. I think Southgate should stay. I think he's our best chance of success, not just at the next tournament, but the tournament after that. And I don't think he did much wrong, as much as I've been pretending that there's loads of criticisms about his approach. You know, I don't think there was anything necessarily wrong with the fact that he stayed to what the team had done so far in the tournament. I mean, it would have been the first time they changed formation. They'd played okay before that point in time, so why not? I don't see anyone else staying on as manager and being better than him. Do you, Gregor?
No, I mean, can we also just say that this is quite extraordinary? This is progress, surely. That 69%, I mean, of course, this is Times readership. It's not, you know, the country at whole, but it's a good indication. 69%, you've just gone out of a tournament in the quarterfinals, and 69% still want the manager to stay. This is new. This
Man's
is good.
Of cancel culture, no less, yeah.
This is
what
good.
Do you think, James?
I think it's the very best selection of people to ask the Times readership.
Of course, I should have said that.
I think generally, like, with... I can't see how, if he goes, I can't see how the progress continues. I was talking to one of our colleagues out in Doha yesterday as we were kind of discussing the aftermath and working out the coverage for what's in today's paper and on the app. And he suggested actually that, you know, that there were so many players who were queuing up at the end of the game to talk to the media and say how much they wanted Southgate to stay. Kane, Rice, Maguire, all the senior players. And my colleague suggested that there almost needed to be a kind of an intervention here. Like the players, that senior group of players need to kind of go and see Gareth together in the new year and say, Gaffer, we want you to stay. Please stay. Don't, you know, he needs to, Gareth talked about how the last 18 months have been very bruising for him personally. And he has been criticised a lot. He got lots of abuse from the crowd after they lost 4-0 to Hungary at Molineux, which, by the way, was a much weakened England team at the end of a long season. And really, given what's happened subsequently, I don't think that result really means anything. I think he just needs to shut out the noise. You know, don't worry about what the critics are saying. The majority clearly want him to stay in the job. His players want to play for him and want him to be in the job. So I think the only thing that I think would make him genuinely want to go would be if he feels that he can't bring, as he mentioned, enough energy to the role, and he feels like his heart's not in it anymore. And then in that case, then maybe, you know, the worst thing that could happen would be for this team to then go backwards under him, and we're in a situation where we're two qualifiers in. The first qualifier in March is Italy, which is incredibly tough. And I actually think this, even though two teams go through in this European qualifiers, I actually think this is a tougher group than England have had for a while. Ukraine are in there, North Macedonia are in there. It might be one where there could be a couple of slip-ups. I do think if Gareth's got the energy to go on, he'll only know that after he's had Christmas and he's had a break and he's recharged and he's actually had time to think about it. But if he has the energy to go on, he absolutely should go on and shut out the noise. And if it takes a group of players to go and see him and say, we want you to stay, and reaffirm their belief, then they need to do it.
I'd say that the kind of positive atmosphere that you were speaking about, James, in the camp and the players feeling, you know, respect for Southgate and everything, they've had to defend them so much as well.
Mm.
They've had to, like, you know, I almost feel that the positive atmosphere and the togetherness is despite us and despite the English public. I hope that doesn't sound like too offensive, but you saw how quickly it turned after you lost in the final in the Euros. It's always felt very fragile, and so this is why this reaction after going out in the quarterfinal, to me as an outsider, looks like a positive step. There are still voices who are angry. I mean, one of them is our colleague Henry Winter, whose opening sentence in his piece today was, "Where's the fury?" You know, I've not covered England for you know, 2 or 3 decades like Henry has, and as invested, but I can't see why there should be anything coming close to fury after watching England lose to the world champions after hitting a penalty over the crossbar by the finest of margins. I don't know how fury comes into the conversation, but it's still out there. It's diminished, but it's still out there.
It's so interesting you mentioned the fury that Henry raises, because I remember after the Iceland defeat, actually feeling I was quite inexperienced in my job at the time. I was relatively new to journalism, and it was the first major tournament that I'd worked at a national newspaper. And I remember senior colleagues being quite angry about it and feeling, you know, this isn't what the England national team should, you know, they shouldn't be losing in the last 16 to Iceland. And I, because, you know, growing up through, you know, my first memory of a tournament was the 98 World Cup, and my first proper one was the 2002 World Cup, where England have kind of had varying degrees of failure, gallant or hapless. I actually felt a sense of real apathy about it, the Iceland defeat. And I didn't feel angry. I felt kind of, you know, I felt, well, you know, this is kind of what we've come to expect over the years now. And it's interesting now that because the rebuilding process has been so good and quick, and the kind of relative success has been so instant, I've kind of, my fury is reserved until something like that happens again. Now, I think if England had lost to Senegal, for example, who are champions of Africa and still a very good team, albeit they were shorn of their two best players, if England had lost that game, I'd have felt a real sense of anger, because I would have felt that they've not fulfilled their potential. Similarly, I think if England had lost that game against Germany at the Euros last time, I'd have also felt angry, because I'd have felt they've not reached the level that I expect of them at this tournament. But I sort of thought, play France, anything after that is a bonus. If they can beat France, anything after that is a bonus. But getting to this point is what I expect of this team at the moment.
I think we kind of forget that managing England was always the impossible job. And just because of the way that Gareth Southgate has changed the culture doesn't kind of mean that we can imagine the immense, like, personal toll doing that job would take on you. And he's done it for quite a while now. And particularly coming into this tournament, like, there was so much negativity and so much, like, Southgate out. And, you know, the way that he's held himself, the way he's, you know, every press conference, every manner of subject has come up, you know, often nothing to do with football. And more societal issues, for example. And he's always, you know, spoken so well and sort of been the perfect manager from the outside and always appeared so calm. But, like, mentally and personally for, like, his family, that's such a toll to do that job. And, like, we don't know if, as Hugh was saying earlier, like, did he have in his head that this was, like, his last go at it? And then he, like, maybe the guy just wants a break. Like, maybe he wants to go back to a club job that's less stressful. Like, England is so much bigger. And I think people don't realise that. Like, even someone like, you look at some of those names, like Pochettino, for example, who's, like, a massive name in club football, but put him in the England job and the amount of abuse and criticism he'd get would be, like, nothing that he's had before, even though he's got to the very highest of the club game. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't know if that makes sense, but I feel like we actually sometimes forget how big their job is to be England manager, and that's our fault. That's part of our job, and that to make that so difficult. But I genuinely think that I don't think anybody should even if it's maybe the right thing for the team and the players want him to stay, I don't think anybody could argue with him if he goes, you know what, I've had enough of this.
If he does bow out, I think that I just would hope that he is given and he stands in history as, and his legacy is that he has completely transformed this job. And that is, he's given the credit he deserves, because when you mentioned the impossible job, Molly, I saw a stat posted over the weekend that I just had to dig out, that England won 6 knockout games in major tournaments from 1968 to 2016. And Gareth Southgate has won 6 from 2018 to 2022. And I think that is, that's a very clear example of making the impossible possible. He's removed the fear. He's removed the relationship between the England team and the press is probably at its best ever, in terms of, you know, it's been very hostile, particularly in the 90s. There was a real disconnect there, and he's managed to kind of unite everyone. One of the first things he did, which I thought was genius, was in ahead of 2018, they put all 23 players up individually and allowed the reporters to kind of go around table by table and speak to every single player. And every single player shared their personal story. They talked about their background. They talked about their club careers. Danny Rose gave an incredibly powerful interview about his mental health. And he gave the players the platform to be humans and to be themselves, and said, here you go. There's no kind of control over this. You speak to whoever you want to speak to. And that has continued. It only didn't happen this year. And that's true, Molly, in the women's game this happens as well, isn't it? With the England women's team. They put all the players up in the squad at the start of the tournament. And I think the only reason it didn't happen this time was because of the short nature of it and the fact that it was mid-season and they didn't have much of a build-up. But it's little things like that have made people reconnect with these players. And I think the reason these players seem so likable and so much more relatable is because Southgate's allowed them to be relatable, and they've not been kind of stage managed by press officers, etc. I mean, there's always a degree of that, but the access has been so much better, and I think the public are seeing a kind of more human England team as a result of that. That's the blueprint that the successor has to follow, and those are the standards that the successor, if there is a successor, has to meet.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. He's made the job almost impossible for someone else to do. He took over the impossible job. He has made it more impossible for whoever is after Gareth Southgate. When that will be, we're not quite clear. Are we unanimous? Are we all in the 69%? We all think that Gareth Southgate should stay? Just a nod of the head. James, yes. Molly, yes. Gregor?
Yes and no, because I think yes in that for England's sake, and no for him. I think that he's 6 years, it's been a tough old slog. And it wouldn't take much for it to go sour. We've just seen that. And then, you know, if he's having to deal with more kind of peaks and troughs ahead of another tournament that's only 18 months away, then I agree it might be best for him just to call it a day now.
We're going to find out very, very soon, I think. At least in the next month or so, I imagine, whether Gareth Southgate wants to stay in the role. I'm sure we'll spend some time with family over Christmas, and the FA will have something to say about it in January. From my perspective, fingers crossed he stays. I love arguing about football, formations, tactics, results, whatever it might be. But on the grand scheme of things, the guy's done an incredible job. England are going somewhere. I think we can win the next Euros. I think we can win the next World Cup. So, no. As much as I like people to get sacked, not Gareth, not now. Okay?
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Let's move on because there is some football at hand. England are out, but there are several teams still in the tournament. The first World Cup semi-final is on Tuesday. It sees Argentina face Croatia. Luka Modric up against Lionel Messi and co. Should be a fantastic game. Difficult to call for me personally. I saw both of these teams. I saw live at the World Cup Argentina four times. I saw Croatia in the flesh three times at the World Cup. Including the game against Brazil last time out for Croatia. And they have the ability to, look, take the sting out of the game at times. They are completely comfortable on the ropes. They don't have any worries being in that position. So a bit like Morocco, give us your best shot and you better score more than once, basically, because if you give us a chance to score once, we will probably take it and that's going to be enough for us to at least get to penalties. And this is the side that is most comfortable taking the game long into the night, if you like, Croatia. So I certainly think they can beat Argentina, and Argentina side who, in all the games that I've seen them, have put in some quality in patches, mainly around what Lionel Messi can do. And until that moment of magic, they've pretty much been 50-50, if not second best, in most of their games so far. I'm almost amazed that they haven't got knocked out yet, to be perfectly honest. But they have just enough quality and they have the best player on the planet, or one of the best players ever, in the shape of Messi. So the question is really, will Messi be the difference once again, or can Modric and co. spring another shock at this World Cup? Molly Hudson.
I think it's sort of a story of two sort of incomplete teams, isn't it? I think if you kind of look at both teams on paper, there's obvious strengths, but there's also quite clear weaknesses. And I think maybe if you look through this tournament, when you have had a team that haven't been that great, and particularly Argentina, it's just been Messi, hasn't it? Messi is just, you know, you think about looking back to the group stage, they were kind of down and out at one point, weren't they? And now they've got further than England. They've lost to Saudi Arabia. What's going on? So I do think on paper, you're like, right, Messi can make the decision. But ultimately, when does their luck run out? Like, how often can you keep relying on Messi to pull something out of the bag? And I think, as you say, the way that Croatia kind of set up and the way that they play, I actually think the game will suit Croatia more than it will Argentina, because we've actually seen Argentina probably play better against like bigger teams that will allow them kind of more time and space than like a Croatia who will happily sit back and they'll make you kind of work for it. And they're not going to suddenly give the attacking players of Argentina loads of space. They're just not going to do that. And I think they must have such a, like, imagine if England did what Croatia do and are just so comfortable. They must have such belief in their group that when it comes to like extra time, oh, we're Croatia, we're going to win. You know, you watch a game where Croatia get through to extra time, you're like, right, they're not going to panic. They're not going to, you know, slide in and make a silly error that you kind of get at that stage of a game where you know if you do that, you're going to lose. And I think there must be such a kind of strength, a belief, a togetherness in that group. And I can't say, you know, I'm a Croatia correspondent or have any idea of what that's like, but you must be able to feel that over there. You must be able to feel that kind of togetherness based on what they've done. And, you know, for players like Modric, you remember when he come off in that game that he hadn't played that well, I think it was in the game after the group stage, and it was like, well, that could be it for him. And I think that as much as we know that this is, you know, Messi's last dance and how much that means, it also is for, you know, a few members of that Croatian team that have done so well. And I think as much as we now look at it and go, oh, you know, if England have won, they could have been favourites, I think every team in the tournament's also looking at that now, like, God, this is a real chance for us. And Croatia particularly must be thinking that. So I actually think Croatia could, again, surprise people. Maybe it won't be the most entertaining thing in the world, but I don't think you can keep relying on Messi to keep pulling it out of the bag again and again and again. I know he's great, but at some point, your luck runs out.
Croatia are almost the antithesis of England. Like, they've made the semi-final in 3 of the 7 times they've been in the World Cup. You know, they're only a 31-year-old country with less than 4 million people.
3 of 6 independently. One of those 7 was as part of a Yugoslavia side.
Okay.
So Croatia, they've been in 6 World Cups and this is their 3rd semi-final.
The resilience is remarkable. And listen to their record in knockout games in the 2018 and this tournament. Draw, won by 1 goal after extra time. Defeat, draw. Now, obviously, they won all the draws on penalty kicks. But, like, they're so resilient. They always find a way of getting through. And that's what makes them a kind of formidable opponent for anyone. Because, as you said, they know they've got probably the best midfield one of the best midfields in the competition. And their control of possession is almost like a defensive tool. They can just knock the ball around in the middle of the park rather than actually particularly trying to go forward. That's what they do a lot of the time. Spread it from left to right, you know, little probing balls here and there, but they've not really got any pace up front. Can't really stick it in behind. So a lot of the time it's kind of possession for possession's sake, and knowing that as they kind of get further and further into the game, they're still in it, they can grind down the opposition or they can find a moment from somewhere. They can just step up a gear and find a way to win. And if not, they'll go to penalties and they'll back themselves. So I could see it being quite boring. I could see it being a stodgy affair. And, you know, we can talk about hope for a moment of magic from Messi, and we can hope for it early too, because then Croatia will have to step into the game. But Croatia's weakness is in attack and scoring goals, even more so than in 2018. And I think, again, it could be another one that goes to extra time.
I really, really hope not. And I'm getting really, really bored of all this extra time now. I know, like, we're all supposed to say, you know, well done, Croatia, the underdogs, etc. But I just, for me, it's just like the antithesis of what I love about a World Cup. And I know the story. I know their story is great, and they hugely overachieve for the size of the country that they are. But my God, I honestly do not want Croatia in the final. Apologies to anyone who is Croatian. I watched the game against Belgium, the crucial decider in that group. And it was the first day that I'd had where I wasn't working. And I watched it in my local pub. And I just, even though Belgium were deeply flawed and there was a lot of problems off the field there and not a lot of harmony in that group, particularly after what De Bruyne had said about, given that interview saying no chance we're going to win it, we're all too old. But for Romelu Lukaku remembering where the goal was, Croatia would be out of this tournament. They didn't have any potency up front. They had a lot of the ball, didn't do very much with it. They were on the ropes at the end. And I know they've dug in and they've got through these knockout games so far, but we've got the prospects of Mbappe v Messi in a final. Can we not just have that, please?
Who would have thought that after the 0-0 draw between Croatia and Morocco in the group stage, that could be a final?
Could you imagine that could be the final again?
Yeah, I know where you're coming from, but still.
This is purely for footballing reasons. Like, I have nothing against Croatia, nothing against Morocco, nothing against any of the teams at this tournament. But just from purely footballing reasons in the pursuit of entertainment, I really, really don't want it to be.
In
fact, there's only one reason why I would have Croatia-Morocco final is because I am obsessed with new names on trophies, and that would mean there is guaranteed new name on the trophy. But apart from that one nerdy caveat, yeah, sorry.
Argentina aren't that entertaining, my friend. No. So if you're expecting them to give you fireworks, they aren't much better than Croatia if you take Lionel Messi out of it.
Magical moments. Messi is part of it. And they give you magical moments like that amazing no-look assist against Holland. And I just like, that's just joyous and makes you sort of just confuses you and go, how can somebody have the vision to do something like that? And I know Luka Modric could do things like that as well. And I know he's an excellent player. But I just... I would love to see Messi in a World Cup final and have a chance to end his career at the highest level with because we think he's going to into Miami next season to finish with the pinnacle, which is the World Cup. And there are plenty of great players who haven't won the World Cup, and he is, of all the great players, the most deserving to win a World Cup.
I don't think I can cope with two more games of Messi loving on the commentary. Like, I don't think I can actually do it. The quarterfinal, I honestly thought about muting the TV. It was too much. The last half an hour, he did nothing. And they were just talking about how great he was. Mm. I'm sorry, I can't cope with that. Get him out. Croatia, come on.
On a reasonable note, when it comes to the football itself, I mentioned Argentina weren't all that. They aren't. I expect Croatia to have the midfield quality. I think they've chopped and changed a lot in terms of their team so far in this tournament, Argentina. And ultimately, they have a leaning towards giving the ball to Messi and waiting for him to make something happen, which, to be honest, is a pretty good plan. But you can certainly beat them if you're Croatia, because Croatia nullify the opposition. They dull the sword, if you like, by just having that possession for a good, you know, whatever it might be, 15, 20 passes. It's more than enough. I think it's more than enough. I'm hearing papers. Is that
well,
me?
No, it's me. I'm just getting my copy of the game from today.
Oh, I see.
I was just checking. It's got, yeah, because the last World Cup, Croatia blew Argentina away in the group stage 3-0. This Argentina team, the Argentina team that lined up in their last match, was only Otamendi and Messi played in that match against Croatia 4 years ago. The team is much changed. And as you mentioned before, the Croatia team is lacking that kind of potency and that goal threat that it had 4 years ago. And the Argentina team then was really imbalanced and in complete disarray, really. So I think but that said, you know, you still have six players in that Croatia team still there now and still in that Croatia starting 11. And if you're going into that game, this game holds no fears for Croatia. I don't think anyone holds any fears for Croatia. And that's why they're so effective in these knockout games at squeaking through. But I think they, you know, if I was Croatia, I would be thinking, actually try and win this in the 90, because, you know, why, you know, A, earlier nights for everyone else back at home, great. But two, I think they have they've got that know-how and that experience of 4 years ago to know how to beat Argentina in the 90. So, and that was a team that had Messi, who was far more at the peak of his powers than he is now.
There is a mortal fear when it comes to Argentina of not winning this World Cup. That's what you sense inside the stadium from all of their fans, from the bench, Scaloni looking like, I mean, literally expecting to be handed a P45 during the game. Like, he just looks entirely frightened the whole time. And from the players as well, who know it's Messi's last chance. And that's the thing. I think they almost feel that they're doing it for him. And that's not good. If they go 1-0 down, Argentina, you get the sense, firstly, they play on the edge a lot, as we saw against the Netherlands. They do put in a lot of heavy challenges throughout the game. They are a bit of they're one of those sides, I think. They're just a little bit niggly. And I do think you can get at them mentally as well as anything else, because the frustration just seems to grow and grow and grow until Messi releases all of the tension with a goal or a pass or a moment that suddenly makes them realise that they're not that bad footballers. But until that comes, yeah, I definitely think Croatia have what it takes to scare them off the pitch, if you like, because now playing against Croatia, they will be seen as heavy favourites back home and they will be thinking, well, we have to win this. We can't not win this. You know, if they were playing France or if they were playing Brazil, it would be a different story. They're now being seen as, we have to get to the final. If we get to the final and it's against France, we should probably win, because who wins back-to-back World Cup? So I do think if you scare Argentina, it might descend to madness. And it wouldn't be the first time that we've seen an Argentina side descend into madness.
Hugh, I was going to ask, because when you were out there and talking to the guys who are out there for the Times, the Argentina fans are a huge presence on the ground. Like, they're one of the best supported teams out there. And how much is that a kind of a help and also a hindrance in the stadium? Because they've got this the kind of weight of expectation that you've just talked about there is kind of I think the players can clearly feel that because of the fact that it's their fans predominantly that are in the stadium. Is it helping them or otherwise, do you think?
I think if you look at the goal celebrations from the Argentina fans, from the Argentina players and the likes of Messi to the fans, you can tell that the players are feeling what the fans are feeling. You know, there's been a couple of games where they've scored the goal, lifted the tension. The players have said, yeah, just relax. We had it in hand. You know, there is clearly that element of we know what you're thinking and feeling. I think Morocco, who fill out the stadium, and Tunisia, who filled out the stadium, their fans were a huge help because you're a side with nothing to lose. And they have smiles on their faces and they're proud of you no matter what. But there are certainly periods of huge noise from those Argentina fans that mean that when they go quiet, and they do go quiet at times when they're a little bit worried, the drums are still being played, but the songs aren't being sung as loudly, that you almost feel that hush come over the stadium. And that is when the real tension comes in, I think. Like they're just waiting for their side to galvanize them and make them sing again. And that's in those periods, that is Messi's moment usually. It's usually when the pressure gets the absolute highest. This is why he's such a great player. This is why he'll always be remembered, because that's when he responds. I don't want to see Argentina and their fans in a position where they're one or two goals down. Because if they're two goals down, those fans are going to be all over them. They're not going to be able to breathe, those Argentina players. You know, that moment where you want your fans to lift you, I'm sorry, these are great fans, but that will not be what message they're sending onto the pitch. Come on guys, you can do it. Oh, believe me, that will not be it. So listen, those Argentina fans make a difference, but only if the side's playing well, because it goes from happy to happier. If they're playing badly, I don't see them as being a huge help, because they don't go into the stadium with that underdog mentality. They're Argentina and they've come to this World Cup and spent the money expecting to see their team lift the trophy. Very quickly, match predictions. Do we think Argentina or Croatia will go through? Gregor Robertson.
It's so hard to call, but I think I'm going to plump for Argentina very narrowly.
Croatia after extra time.
James Restall.
Argentina after 90 minutes.
I'm going to go 2-0 Argentina. Yeah, Messi to score once again. There's a huge semi-final coming on Wednesday between Morocco and France. And there's just a huge colonial, historical relationship between the two. There's the relationship between Islam and France in society. This match takes on such a huge context, with Morocco being the first African side in a semi-final. Clearly then, the chance of becoming the first African side in a final and the first to, obviously, to win it. Whether that weighs on them or not, I'm not sure. Their manager, Walid Regragui, he spoke about it before, saying, look, we know that we're flying the flag for Africa and people feel that way, and we know that we're flying the flag for Arabic football fans as well, but we feel like we are here representing Morocco, and what we do is for them and our fans and our country, which I do think is an important distinction. And as much as the commentators will constantly talk about Africa throughout the game, this is about Morocco and France, and it will be an incredible occasion. Morocco's fans in Doha were second to none, really. It's them, it's Argentina. Like I said, it was Tunisia and Senegal for me who really stood out. But they will fill that stadium full of Moroccan fans, and the noise will be unbearable throughout. The whistling every time the opposition have the ball, the cheering and singing every time the Moroccans do anything of positive note. I mean, it's just fantastic to witness. They can definitely cheer on Morocco to a higher level. I think they already have, in terms of being able to defend for their lives. It all depends on whether the Moroccans are fully fit. Naef Aguerd, the West Ham defender, if he is fit, he missed the last game. His replacement, El Yamik, was man of the match. He was absolutely unbelievable. But then you also have Romain Saïss, who went off with injury in that game with his hamstring. Again, those three players, if you like, whichever two of them start, are going to be absolutely integral. If they get back Mazraoui at left back as well, he missed the last game, that would be huge for them as well. So we'll see how they're doing in terms of their fitness. But if France play the way that they played against England, they can definitely be beaten by Morocco, which would be a miraculous result. How do we see this game going?
I actually, ironically, having all said about how, you know, boring and defensive are a defending team can be. I actually have found Morocco really entertaining this tournament. I don't know whether it's just because they're the underdog, because their fans are going mental every time they get the ball. But like
I've said the same on many occasions already, Molly. Absolutely agree. Like they've just got that's what makes them unique,
players, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Like I know they've been the underdog, and I know there have been times where they've had to defend and dig in and do the hard, boring stuff well. But like, they've got some really fun players to watch. And yeah, I've just really enjoyed them, and I'm definitely rooting for them. And I think it's kind of one of those where your heart is like, Morocco can do this. And then your head's like, come on, what are the actual chances of them beating Spain, Portugal and France to get to a World Cup final? Surely they can't do it. You'd actually be gutted if you were Morocco. Like what were you saying about earlier, the kind of route to a final? If they'd have got like the other teams, like I'd have genuinely backed them to beat either Argentina or Croatia just because of the way they play. And I think for them, obviously France is the most difficult semi-final they could have got. And obviously it takes an extra kind of connotation with the cultural background as well. But I just think they, again, like how we talked about Croatia having such a togetherness, like imagine the mood in that Morocco camp right now. Like they're all playing better. Like you look at Ziyech for Chelsea and then you look at how he plays for Morocco and it's like night and day. And I think, like, look, I'd love to see them do it. I just think France are just going to do something boring and be good and
You know, in much the same way that in the build-up to England-France, you all talk about how to stop Mbappe and that you've got one of the best-placed right-backs in the world to do so, Morocco do as well. And Achraf Hakimi. And he's not...
I was just going to say that.
I saw him actually tweet him directly, Mbappe, yeah, saying, like, looking forward to seeing you on Tuesday or whatever it is, my friend. And was it Wednesday? Anyway, it's a World Cup. Can't remember.
It's a bit like with... Sort of everyone was talking about Kane and Lloris getting into each other's heads with the penalties because they play each other. So, you know, they train with each other. It's like, it's the same with these guys, you know, it's like, how are they, you know, two, you know, PSG club mates, they must come up against each other in training every day. And then when they're doing match situations, they will be, you know, they will know each other's games inside out. And that's going to make a really fascinating dimension to this, which is why I think, you know, and then we said this in the build up to the England-France game as well, they've got to have a plan for Griezmann. And I mean, Griezmann has been, James Gearbrand's written a sensational piece today in the Times about kind of why he thinks Griezmann should be considered one of the greatest international footballers ever because of the way he's reinvented himself and the way that he's had so many tournaments where he's brought something different. And I think if Griezmann can do even for, he showed even in about, what, 20 minutes, If you let him go for 20 minutes, he has the ability to knock you out of a tournament, basically.
But he'll do well to find space in that midfield. He will do very well. The way they've defended so kind of compactly, that midfield three. But I said this before, it's more like a 4-1-4-1. Amrabat sits so deep and then got four players in front of them. They're all really, really compact. And Hugh, you mentioned, you know, the first choice left back has been injured, but Atia Alla was extraordinary as well in the last game. Another player is really quick, and you know, with Dembele on the right as well, as a player with great pace, and he was outstanding in the last game. So their defensive structure and the way that they can spring attacks on the break has been an absolute joy to watch, and I think they will pose France problems again. Absolutely. Look, it's going to come down to, I'm sure, fine margins again, whether they can really contain those two wingers, because there'll be crosses coming in the box, and when crosses come in the box, they need to defend them very well. And as you said at the start, they're missing their two first choice, probably going to be missing their two first choice centre-halves. But I think they'll cause them problems. It will not be a walk in the park for France.
I don't want to bring a bit of a downer to proceedings, but if Morocco do go all the way this and win the World Cup, that Morocco are the winners that FIFA would most like to win this World Cup. Because I think it gives them, I think this, a complete underdog coming from nowhere and winning the World Cup would only highlight and only strengthen their plans for an expanded World Cup next time. And it would be a justification, I think, for them. I think they would see it as saying, look, any team can win the World Cup. And the teams that you don't think heralded, and you know, the big countries don't always win the World Cup. And I think that's, you know, I'm not saying that's why, you know, I'd be delighted if Morocco won the World Cup, but I think a slightly sort of sour political note to this as well is that I think
they would use it as justification for bringing it to Qatar.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Those are 2 points that absolutely, like, they would kind of fade into the background for the enormity of what this would mean. Mm. But they are valid points, absolutely. So, I'm still going to be cheering them.
Yeah. We'll go deeper into the details on that when we preview Morocco taking part in the actual final. Okay, we can bring those 2 points back onto the podcast when they get past France 1-0. That's my prediction. another clean sheet. What? Oh, genuinely, I've watched them in the flesh at this World Cup, what, 3 times? They are, without doubt, the hardest working team at the World Cup. Without doubt, the fittest team at the World Cup. In terms of the sprints that they do per game, it is ridiculous. You know, you see the likes of Hakimi, like, sprinting the length of the pitch to close down the goalkeeper, you know, in stoppage time at the end of the last game, which made no sense to me. I was literally screaming, stay in your own half. You're only going to have to run back. But he still did it. He still had the physical ability to do it. They just don't give you an inch. And when they counter, it doesn't always come off. They've got a few players with just really quick feet. I think it's Unahi in the midfield.
Unahi's been brilliant.
This tournament as well. I've loved watching Boufal this tournament. Like, yeah. I always actually loved him at Southampton, but I've really loved watching him this tournament.
But this is the thing. So they've got a few players that just have the quality of first touch and a little pass with the second touch. Suddenly they play a little triangle and they've gone past you in the midfield, and suddenly they're into your back four and they've got half the pitch to run into. So those counter-attacks, like I say, there are so many occasions. I know it will seem weird because of the scorelines that they've had so far, but if you look at their games as a whole, there are so many occasions where if they just get the final pass right, they'll be in two on the goalkeeper or two on one, you know, on the centre half. You know, it's they are so close so often on the counter-attack to having an incredible move end up with a one-on-one. It just needs to go their way, just needs to fall their way. And of course, they need to take the few opportunities that they get. If they do that, they are an incredibly difficult team to score a goal past. 8 games now under this manager, 1 goal conceded. That was an own goal in the group stage against Canada, I think. And they definitely can do it.
Is it not like less than a handful of shots on target they've conceded as well? It's like remarkable.
No one gets a shot off in their box. Yeah. Like you're not gonna get a shot off in the box. Basically, they're incredible. They are incredible. It would be a dream story. It would be an incredible result for the Moroccan nation and all of their football fans if they can beat France. It is a huge, huge step. My heart obviously says Morocco. My head says France. What do we think will happen, Gregor?
I'm with you, yeah. I really want it to be Morocco, but I feel like France might just find a way, and it might be, you know, as they're the walking wounded, and they've done remarkably well to kind of, I don't know, battle through the number of injuries that they've had and, you know, bring in and use so many substitutes in most games. But I just feel like it could be one too far. I hope not, though.
I actually think France could be complacent. I genuinely think that they're not going to think that Morocco can do it. And I think Morocco will score. I don't know if they'll win, but I think they'll score.
I think it'll be a game too far for them, sadly. I think France will win. I think they just have too much quality. I was incredibly impressed by them against England in a game in which the public opinion says they played second best, and yet they in the key moments, and I think this is the most important thing, in the moments where they are on top, they will create chances that will seriously, seriously threaten Morocco. And I think that's the problem. That said, I do also think I was not impressed at all with Upamecano against England, and I think he can be got at, definitely. I think England didn't test Koundé enough either, and I think there are weaknesses in the French defence that Morocco could certainly exploit. But I think France is going to have too much quality for them.
Okay. Well, my head says France 3-0. My heart says Morocco 1-0. I'm going to say Morocco 1-0. Come on, the Atlas Lions. The dream of an African team in the World Cup final may well come true. We will speak to you after both of those games. So we will have a podcast for you in the middle of the night on Tuesday and Wednesday, reviewing each of those semi-finals. great conversation. Gregor Robertson, Molly Hudson, James Restall, thank you very much. You can look online, find out what Henry Winter's been saying about who needs to replace Gareth Southgate as England boss, and read all of our great journalism ahead of these two semi-finals on the Times app right now. Download that wherever you get your apps from. Of course, you can subscribe to the podcast. Just hit the bell. Notifications will let you know whenever we release an episode. Also, subscribe to The Game. Just check it out online. thetimes.co.uk/thegame. We'll see you tomorrow.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.